Beep boop, hello.
Bleep blorp, hello.
How's it going?
It progresses through time and space. Mostly not space, time.
You're just saying you continue to exist. That's as much as you're going to commit to at this junction?
Yeah. Apologies to the Dadaists and, existentialists out there, but existence, it's happening. So...
I don't think they're against existence.
I don't know. They seem a little on edge about it. But I do have some ennui, if that puts them at ease at all.
Who doesn't?
We got a surplus of ennui here these days. Mm. Just ennui and stuff and things.
That's French, right?
Yeah. It means unhappiness. No, it doesn't. It means something specific that I can't remember off the top of my head. How are you? What French thing describes you right now?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, are the French really the authorities on the assorted emotions, particularly the downerish ones? But
I think the French would say yes.
Well, I mean, of course they would. But no, I'm fine. I'm whatever. I guess I feel like I should get back on my old answer. I'm real tired or whatever.
It's my secret. I'm always tired.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. A couple nights of, I think I got 4.5 hours yesterday and then 6-ish today. The dog wanted breakfast. Well, he didn't want breakfast. He just wanted to go out at 4:30 in the morning. I guess because, it's still cool and the sun's down and it gets warm too fast here. But yeah.
When you say he wanted to go out, you mean just to go out and play or go out and do the business?
Yeah, he wakes up, he flaps his head, and you can hear his ears make a flapping noise. And then if you ignore him long enough, he'll start to whine just ever so slightly. And that means, it usually means, hey, I want to pee and I want breakfast. But when it's 4:30 in the morning, which happens, once every couple of months, that means he's going to go pee and then he doesn't get breakfast because that would be insane.
Mm. Have you considered getting like a little doggy door in the back for him?
Yeah, but it's just another place for hot air to leak in, as well as spiders and scorpions and snakes and things.
The thorough protection that a doggy door provides doesn't really keep the little critters out.
No, it's just a little magnetically positioned flap. But you could slide like a little door in there, so it's like locked, but that kind of defeats the purpose of letting the dog go out on its own. Also, this time of year, you got to be a little wary of the dog being outside on his own, snakes and things. You don't want him just wandering around there any old times. We should probably start supervising him a little bit. We saw our first scorpion yesterday on the side of the house.
Is it scorpion season?
Apparently it's scorpion season. It is officially in the 90s every day. And I guess that means it's time to come out and find surfaces to perch on that are cooler than the ground. I don't know how it works. All I know is they're getting the fly swatter.
The dream of the 90s is alive in scorpion season.
Thanks Skype. I didn't have the people love when we talk about Skype. I didn't have the chat window open, so when you typed scorpion season, my whole Skype window went bright red with the word scorpion season across it.
That's production values.
How they let you know. An entire monitor flashing bright orange or whatever. What kind of unwelcome fauna do you have on your premise? That's the one that's animals, right?
Yes. We usually just have spiders. Tons of spiders. More spiders here than where either my apartment or Jason's apartment. It seems to have something to do with the area of town we are in, which is different than where we were before. But
you're in the mountains now.
Yeah,
it's right there in the name.
It's more of a hill, really. But I don't know. Maybe spiders just want to climb up tiny hills and build their webs from there. But
they got all those legs, they got to keep them in shape somehow.
And what's weird is we don't have any one particular kind of spider. We have a variety, a cornucopia of spiders, and even the ones that are technically not spiders that are daddy long legs, which are unsettling when you see them just like sort of taking up a large section of the ceiling, because they're not small.
Hang on, did you just say the daddy long legs is not technically a spider?
Yeah, there's, it's confusing because there's daddy long legs, which is a spider that people call daddy long legs, and then there's another one that's daddy long legs, which is not a spider, which is the actual daddy long legs, not the thing that people call daddy long legs, which is a spider.
Oh wow! So so daddy long legs, the spider, is stealing valor.
I don't know. I think it's one of those situations like in Florida where there's a flying cockroach that we all call the palmetto bug, but that's not really a palmetto bug. The palmetto bug is this stinky little bug that lives inside of palmettos. But just colloquially, it's referred to as the palmetto bug, even though it's a large flying cockroach. It's totally different. But at least none of the scorpions or spiders fly, I guess. That's a positive thing.
Yeah, that would not be pleasant.
Yeah, when you went to Florida, did you happen to cross a palmetto bug?
Not to my recollection, but I don't know, maybe that's how they get you. Yeah, you sneak in.
No, you would know, because you'd be like, what's that thing that's on the wall? Oh no, it's flying at me. Yeah, they just fly at your face. They're unpleasant in all ways. They're not certainly the worst bugs, and they don't actually do any damage to you, but, there's just something about a cockroach flying at your face that you don't really want in your life. You know, and we can't really think of a positive reason why anyone would desire that, but yeah, for the most part, the spiders are not on me, at least, and I assume for the most part, when you find a scorpion, their scorpions are not on you either.
Yeah, generally. Well, I mean, I'm sure we've discussed it before. When I was a teenager, I found one just under the corner of my pillow on my bed as I laid down to go to sleep. But that's the closest they've ever come to being on me. Generally, what we find these days is, I think it's because we had flowers in the house for the past month or two, and plants and stuff. They've just been these little tiny gnats that just like to gravitate towards my face while I'm working, because also my office is the warm office, so you know, it's nice and cozy in here. Come in and buzz around my eyeballs.
Yeah, that's unpleasant. Back at Jason's old apartment, there was a little bit of a fly issue, and we could never really pin down the source, but it seemed to be just because the windows were old and crappy, that they would come inside because it was cooler. But they were just annoying flies that were just also very slow until you went to swat at them. And then they were suddenly little, tiny, super fast dodging machines. So they were annoying. But you know, nothing, again, nothing like venomous or anything. And the scorpions that you come across out there, are they the kind that like, a sting and you're dead, or are they the kind that it's like a sting and you're in pain and uncomfortable about it?
I'm fairly certain they are not the kind that kill human beings. They could probably kill small animals. But no, it's not like black widowy scorpions where your life is going to be in danger. It's going to swell up and it's going to sting. But I don't believe it is going to kill you. But you know, like I said, they don't live very long around here, because we kill them with extreme prejudice. Have you ever seen though? One of the things I want to see. You ever see those terrible infomercials for the thing that looks like a water gun that shoots salt?
No.
It's basically like a shotgun that blasts salt at like flies and bugs and stuff, because it moves fast enough to like knock them down or kill them, but at the very worst, you're just going to have salt around your house, like on the floor. Like it's not like, you know, like spraying bug spray and stuff. I kind of want to get one of those for any of the flying or non-flying critters that find their way into my house up on high walls. I want to just blast them with some salt, and then when they're on the ground, you know, bam, fly swatter.
Yeah, but then you got to pick up all the little salt grains and throw them over your shoulder.
Like a Continental Soldier, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there an origin to the salt over the shoulder bad luck thing?
I don't actually remember off the top of my head. I think I looked at it on Wikipedia one time and should technically know, but don't. So We'll just leave it at that. Just consider your house very seasoned, I guess.
See, exactly. Yeah. You don't want a bland house.
No.
When your walls are already white enough. Yeah, I always think of the scene in Dumb and Dumber where he throws the salt shaker over his shoulder and hits the guy, and then, you know, there's that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't usually think about Dumb and Dumber.
it's not in any context.
No, it was not a movie that that sat well with me at the time that I saw it. Mm. I never appreciated that film. I don't know what it is.
Artistically or what?
Just everything about it. It's weird because I on paper it should theoretically be something that I would find entertaining at least a little bit, but in practice I didn't enjoy it. He gets his tongue stuck to the thing, and you know, he gets the other guy gets Jim Carrey gets Austria confused with Australia and says shrimp on the Barbie, and then the Samsonite luggage.
There's the scene with the pooping. Mm-hmm.
I don't gravitate towards that as a film that I need to see ever again under any circumstances.
Oh, is that right? It's like mm-hmm. Dumb and Dumber is like your Requiem for a Dream.
No, because at least, I mean, I guess I could say that there's something about Requiem for a Dream which is like enduring in some way, and that would mainly be the music that you find in trailers, as we discussed before. But I don't really need to see either one of those for different reasons. One is bad comedy, and the other one is just bad. just to make you feel terrible.
Dumb and Dumber has that one song that was real popular on the radio at the time, which I can't remember the name of. Oh, New Age Girl by Dead Eye Dick.
Oh, I'll take your word for it.
You know that song.
I could theoretically know that song, but I don't know it off the top of my head right now. It is fortunately not accessible to me.
Oh, God. Google, I hate you so much for all of the things that you do. I tried to be sneaky and send you a thing, and it's just... Oh, love of God.
Can you stop sending me links? This is a podcast, and
I can try.
It's not that helpful.
You're a podcast. Insert clip of New Age Girl here.
Mm-hmm. No, I shan't.
You shan't. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Where do we take this episode? Do you want to talk about food again? You want to talk about travel? You want to talk about work? What do you want to talk about? What's on your mind these days, Joe?
I always love talking about food, but I don't know where to approach the topic of food from other than our usual conversation starter, which is, what'd you have for dinner?
You know, one thing I can bring up is I'm going to skip past food for a minute and talk about dessert. I'm a fan of the dessert. I don't know what the technical term for it is. It's two chocolate chip cookies with ice cream in the middle. Are you familiar?
It's an ice cream sandwich.
No, an ice cream sandwich is the one that has just like that sort of chocolatey felt looking stuff with ice cream in the middle.
They're both still ice cream sandwiches, Dad.
It's called a Chipwich, technically.
Okay. You know? I mean, it's an ice cream sandwich. It is a sandwich with ice cream. It's
fair
two,
enough.
Two cookies, but ice cream.
It's too generic. I'm a fan of those. I like them very much. Trader Joe's has really good ones. We have some just Safeway ones right now. But I got one yesterday, and it only had one cookie on one side. I had an open face ice cream sandwich, and I was offended on so many levels.
So is an open face ice cream sandwich still a sandwich, or is that a cookie a la mode?
Honestly, it was. It's like a tostada or something. I don't know what it is technically.
Well, a la mode, just, you know, it was a chocolate chip a la mode. Like, you take a chocolate chip cookie and you'd put a scoop of ice cream on top of it. So theoretically, that's what you had. But the ice cream's on the bottom. So is it still an open face sandwich, or is it?
Well, or the ice cream's on the top because you can't hold. You're not gonna hold the cookie from the top with the ice cream facing down. That would just be insane.
You still picked it up.
Well, how else am I going to eat it? I'm not going to eat it with a fork. I picked the cookie up by the edge and held it ice cream vertically and then kind of just, you know, ate it like a slice of pizza.
Okay, so was it a pizza then? Was it a personal pizza? A personal ice cream pizza?
You know, I've never believed personally in the whole, like, you know, the ice cream taco, the choco taco thing. That's not No, you're not pulling that one over on me. That's not a taco. Don't call it a taco. It's just a dessert. It's just an oddly shaped drumstick or something.
They taste good though. Except
I'm sure. Oh yeah, I don't debate that it tastes good. It's just don't call it an ice cream taco or chocolate taco or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the problem with the chocolate taco is mainly the last time I had one. It just was sort of like there's this inferiority to how it was put together. I think that maybe they've, you know, not exactly maintained their quality standards, or at least my recollection of them has sort of like polished away the blemishes of improperly put together Choco Tacos. Because if you don't fully seal it in that chocolate, then the ice cream leaks out and sort of like smears and refreezes on the sides. And it's just not... Nobody wants to eat that. The whole point is that you have the waffle cone shell of it to hold on to instead of just like leaky mess all over, which is just inconvenient to eat at that point.
So you're saying the memory of the Choco Taco has been moon pied a little bit for you?
Yeah, a little bit. I would say the moon pies that I've had, the mail order moon pies that I ordered, were of a higher quality than the last Choco Taco I had. I really think that it's just I don't know, maybe people don't store them properly or something, but they get all gross and unpleasant to eat. So it's sort of sad because it would otherwise be like you said, more like a drumstick, but with a higher topping ratio because it's all topping along one edge of it.
Is that right?
Well, yeah, if you think about it, a drumstick is only topping on the top.
Right. Well, I guess I don't picture Choco Taco. I don't picture toppings on the Choco Taco. Is the whole side of it dipped? Oh, I guess.
Yeah.
No, okay. So there's just the rim there is kind of chocolatized with some nuts in it.
Yeah, and then the ice cream's covered with the chocolate and nuts too.
Yeah.
You don't just have exposed ice cream. Yeah. So
right, of course.
And the drumstick, you only get that like circle, that like, I don't know, silver dollar quantity of, man, who measures things in silver dollars anymore? They didn't even use silver dollars when I was a kid. I remember when I was at a restaurant with my mom, I want to say, and there we had silver dollar pancakes on the menu. I was like, I wanted to order them because I was like, look at the things. Why do they call them silver dollar pancakes? And she had to explain to me that there used to be a currency that was the silver dollar. But yeah, anyway,
did you ever do that where you like collect them, you're like, look, I've got this rare thing, it's like literally it's just a dollar, kid, like there's nothing important about it?
Well, I used to hold on to the Sacagawea ones that they had issued at the time, and was it the Susan B. Anthony whatever ones.
And don't forget the JFK half dollars.
I didn't have those, and then because I worked at a grocery store, we would frequently get $2 bills. So, you know, you'd put $2 in the till and then take the $2 bill, because it was just fun to say you had one of those, because, most people didn't. But for some reason people were spending them, on occasion. It was very weird. But
did I ever tell you about, the weird, jewelry store, sort of old school dandy fella who used to carry around and use like old outdated currency? I forget why I was in his store. I think I was trying to sell some jewelry or something for somebody. It wasn't for me. But he's one of these guys, you know, with the big mustache who wears, you know, 3-piece suits and pocket watches and stuff, which is a great choice for Phoenix, Arizona. But he also, not only did he carry around $2 bills, he carried around, I don't even know what it was. They're like oversized bills. They're like twice the size of a regular $20 bill or whatever, or $1 bill, but they're legal tender. They're just old. And he's one of these, know-it-all assholes who would try to pay for things in places and cause a scene when they wouldn't accept it or say like, this isn't real money.
Oh, just so he could explain to them.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, to the point that like, I think he was like a Second Amendment guy too, where he's like, call the cops on me. I dare you, you know, like I'm walking out of here, 'cause I paid for my cup of coffee with this, you know, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that says $2 on it and says, you know, United States of America or whatever it is. So, you know, just because you're uncultured and don't understand that this is legal currency doesn't mean that I'm going to stick around and listen to your poppycock hogwash. And he would storm on out of there and be confronted by the police because he liked to be morally right and just cause a scene.
I'm less enamored by this as the story went on. Yeah, because at first I was picturing some guy with the outfit that you described in one of those like change things that sits on the belt, you know, where they like push down from the top like and the change goes out the bottom.
Where he's just got the little click thing where yeah. some quarters.
Yeah, like I was just sort of picturing that. I was like, oh, that's charming. And then you described this whole story and I was like, oh, no, this guy's awful.
Yeah. But like, you know, he's the kind of guy who wears, you know, pocket watches and shiny shoes when it's 110 outside because it appeals to this image that he's living in 1870 or whatever.
Weird.
Yeah. Also, like, why would you, I mean, I get maybe some of this currency isn't as, you know, it's not as, like, a $2 bill isn't, like, overtly valuable in as much as it's, you know, it's just $2. But, like, why would you be spending this, like, hang on to it. Like, if you're a collector of this stuff, don't try to spend it, you know, for lunch or something.
Well, I think the answer to that is that he wants that whole superiority trip of doing this thing, and so that's why it's worth it to him to spend that.
He's willing to exchange his fancy 100-year-old $5 bill for the story and the deep personal arousal that it causes him.
Yeah, like I'm sure he really does, you know, have quite an affection for causing those scenes and making a big to do about it. Because I mean, if he didn't care, then he would just be spending regular money. Or
and he
using
wouldn't be
a credit card.
These stories to some random kid who came in off the street to try and sell some old jewelry or something.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a jerk and a very lonely jerk who just wants to be jerky to get attention. It's his thing.
Actually, to be honest, I don't think I was there to sell anything. I think maybe he was like a notary and he was next to a UPS or something and I needed something notarized.
Well, now your story just keeps changing and I don't know who to believe.
Well, like, what am I going to be doing in a strip mall jewelry store next to a vet of my own accord? Like, I wasn't there for me.
Okay. I mean, I wasn't really going to, like, press you on why you were there. I think the weird part is the other guy. But if you want me to inquire further about your motivations, I can.
I mean, you can inquire. I don't have any, there's nothing there.
Explain
I don't have any
yourself,
memory to
sir.
Support that.
What are you trying to hide by going to this jewelry store?
I'm covering up a murder. It's just an alibi. It's really across town.
This man was murdered by $2 bills. But so anyway, you were talking about the ice cream sandwich. And I have an affection for the, like you described, the black felt, like sad, floppy ice cream sandwich.
I like those as well, but the other person in my household does not abide them nearly as much as the ice cream cookie sandwich.
Oh yeah, Jason hates them. I kind of just like that they just sort of like melt into nothing when you bite into them. They're just soft and that's it. There's nothing like really challenging about them. I don't really like the ones that are actual like cookies because those ones I find have a really hard texture when you go to bite through them when they're frozen.
Well, you get artisanal ones, if you get them from the grocery store, the cookie is softened by the weeks that it's been in a freezer.
That's possibly true. I don't know. There's a ice cream place called Cool House. As you would spell it, and then H-A-U-S. And they...
like the kids spell it.
Yeah, and they have these big honking ice cream cookie things going on where you bite into that and it's just like, this is awkward. I feel like I'm sort of like trying to like gnaw a rock that has ice cream inside of it and then you know, just sort of eat it fast enough that the ice cream doesn't melt all over my hands, but slow enough that the cookie thaws a little bit.
It's like the coffee shops that have like homemade pop tarts for, you know, for sale here with your espresso. It's like, just don't do that. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, those are never that good. But the I didn't have an ice cream sandwich recently, but I did have s'mores. And that was a, you know, sort of cookie thing with a thing inside of it. That was a sandwich, so to speak. But
s'more a sandwich?
Yeah, they're also pain in the butt to eat those. I don't understand.
Just as a point of contention, while we're here offending everyone about all of our opinions, mm-hmm. Do you say s'more or do you kind of pause on the s'more?
No, I say s'more.
Okay. There are people who basically say like S apostrophe more, like some
yeah.
more.
People that go s'more. Yeah. There's a pause there. Yeah.
And I want all of those people to fall off a cliff and drown in the ocean because I hate it so much when they do that.
Now that we're saying anything controversial. I just say s'more. Or s'mores. The pluralization, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if it's even correct or if people are going to come after me, like, you know, saying Legos or something. But I just heard
saying Legos a couple months ago.
Yeah, I don't think I like them that much. I was talking to Jason about this because he was who I was having a s'more with. I like graham crackers a lot. Like, as we've discussed before, like, I like crackers. And a graham cracker is a cracker, basically, mm-hmm. just ever so slightly sweet.
Yes, but you like a dry, textured cracker.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like a little crumble, but it's still got a little snap to it. So it's not, like, completely falling apart in your hands. Uh-huh. And it's just mildly sweet.
Did you tell Jason that your favorite part of the s'more was the graham cracker, and he looked at you in disgust?
Yeah, because he likes the toasty marshmallow part, and I just find that the toasty marshmallow is never as perfectly toasted as I want it to be, and I find that frustrating. And
you don't like eating something that tastes like a campfire?
No. Well, are you a marshmallow burner or are you a marshmallow toaster?
Oh, yeah. No, you got to burn it.
No. See, I don't want to burn it. I want it to be just golden all the way around, evenly golden all the way around.
I don't want to set it on fire. Right when you get to the evenly golden all the way around part is when it bursts into flames. So
that's usually what
happens there.
See, what you do is you spend 5 minutes barely toasting it, and then eventually
you're like bobbing in and out like toward the fire. You're gonna set it and rotate it. You're gonna come in and out, sort of tempering the heat the entire time.
Well, I'm rotating too. Mm-hmm. You gotta constantly rotate because this is also. I know that some people just like take a twig or a branch or something and use that. It's not sanitary. Don't do that. But I you know, if you use a professional skewer, like real people, I guess, and you rotate that, then you can get an even rotation all the way around. Especially if you placed the marshmallow appropriately. However, as it heats up, the marshmallow will start to droop. So you have to keep rotating faster and faster. Otherwise, it's going to droop off and potentially fall off of the skewer.
Yes, this is all true. But the real thing that I want to come back to, whether it's Choco Taco or s'mores or whatever, is that historically you have been a man who says you don't have much of a sweet tooth. And it seems like you have a decent amount of affection, at least for a few dessert-related products. And I'm wondering how you reconcile the two, sir.
Well, that's easy, because if you've ever had one of those sad black felt ice cream sandwich bars, you know that they're not that sweet. And if you've ever had a s'mores, you know that it's incredibly sweet. But the problem is you're always having a s'more in a social situation. You're very rarely just having s'mores by yourself.
So you're only a social deserter.
Yeah, I'm only a social deserter. title. I just don't love them because of the sweetness of the marshmallows. And as we talked about when I was a kid, I loved marshmallows and I would have marshmallow and peanut butter sandwiches, but I don't have a sweet tooth right now. And so marshmallows, like in a s'more, it's sickeningly sweet, especially when you pair it with something like a Hershey's chocolate, where...
Are you going to tell me you sub out Hershey's chocolate for something less sweet?
No, because that was what was in the s'mores kit that we received.
You got a s'mores kit.
Yes, it's a s'mores kit.
You know, you can just buy graham crackers and chocolate and marshmallows.
Yeah,
right?
But I can't just buy a campfire. So I was at a place where there was a campfire.
You literally can. You can buy wood.
I know.
Set it on fire.
Not in this backyard.
Give it a try.
Yeah, I don't think
you got a gas range at the new place there.
We do. I don't want to melt a marshmallow onto it. Also,
no, you just pick the grate up off of it and you just crank it up.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make a mess. But at the same time, it's just a lot to go through for no particularly good reason. Like, I don't want to do it, but I did it because we had a s'mores kit. Again, there was a s'mores kit that Jason wanted, and there's X number of s'mores. So I'm not just going to sit there and not have a s'more. I have to have the s'more as part of the social experience. So I had a s'more.
How many s'mores are in a s'mores kit? Because, you know, you're not telling me when to stop with s'mores. I'm stopping when I hate myself.
Well, they claim that this serves two. And so there were four large marshmallows, the big kind, not the teeny tiny hot cocoa kind. And then a full Hershey's chocolate bar four planks of graham crackers. I don't know how to describe the quantity graham crackers come in. But you know,
it's like a 4x8-inch thing.
Yeah, it's a sheet, basically break it up to sub graham cracker components.
It's like a sheet of drywall, but tiny.
Yeah, and about as tasty. So the, you know, the sheet of
have you tried eating drywall?
No, I'm just kidding. But you would take the graham crackers, and I personally would snap them, and I would try to like make a. Because it was basically two long skinny rectangles across and four long skinny... Wait, no, that's not right. There were long skinny rectangles. And basically, you would have enough to make two squares out of these. And so you could make a sandwich out of one plank. If you had these planks, then you could make your one marshmallow plank sandwich. But what Jason wanted, and I got yelled at for, is that he wanted both of the marshmallows inside of a full plank with the half of the chocolate bar and then another full plank as one complete sandwich.
He wanted like a 12-inch Subway hoagie style.
Yeah, he wanted a s'more hoagie, and I was like, no, I want a s'more sandwich. I want a s'more burger or whatever. Like, it was a different set of ratios and dimensions and expectations about that process.
S'mores are square, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Every s'more I've ever seen is square, but I was violating some sort of like, I don't know, constitutional amendment by doing this. I have no idea. I've only ever seen square s'mores with one marshmallow per s'more.
You tried to eat your candy bar with a fork and knife in front of him, and it was like, what are you doing?
No, I didn't do that.
It's a Seinfeld reference.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole episode about sports players that eat their dessert, which is just a candy bar on a plate with a fork and knife, and it freaks everybody out.
Well, I have had a candy bar on a plate with a fork and a knife at fancy restaurants where they're like, we've made an ice cream Snickers, but super fancy.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just going to say, like a real one, because there's a place that we've gone as a family for various things, and they're like, oh, we've got our own Snickers bar here that's stuffed with ice cream and stuff on the side. Like, great, thank
you. Don't forget the weird random flake of gold leaf that's on there to show you it's real fancy.
Great. Yeah, I would get something other than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't really love chocolate to begin with, so I always gravitate to different desserts.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. You don't love chocolate, but the alternative is typically something sugarier.
Not necessarily. Sometimes you can get something that's a little more vanilla forwards, a little more fruit forwards.
Oh, you can get like a pie.
Yeah, like
get a tart.
I love pies and tarts. We even had a meal recently where I could have a creme brulee. I was chastised for ordering this very 80s, 90s, you know, we don't have a pastry chef at our restaurant dessert. But I was like, it's probably the best dessert they have on the menu. It was really good. Like real vanilla bean, all the usual stuff. And it has sugar on it, but you torch it.
Bits.
Yeah.
Are you a tiramisu person?
I do like tiramisu.
Mm. I loves it. I could take it or leave it.
It's not that chocolatey. It's more of a coffee cocoa flavor. So it just doesn't have, I don't know. I don't find it too bitter or too sweet. I'm fine with it. But I do prefer it when it's a tiramisu that's had the chance to sit in the fridge for a while, because then it sort of all becomes one. I don't like a freshly made tiramisu where the ladyfingers are still, I don't know, firm or something. Like, you don't want it to like all fall apart into distinct components when you scoop into it. It should all just sort of like be one, like concrete of tiramisu when you scoop into it.
Mm.
If that makes any sense to you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't love tiramisu in general.
I mean, I don't understand why you don't like it, though.
It's just, it's not that interesting to me.
No, not that interesting to you. It means it's got a sweetened cream. It's got a cocoa powder. It's got a chocolate.
It's the powder. I don't really got a lot of powders in my desserts.
This is also a point of contention between Jason and I when it comes to desserts, because I like, as a kid.
Sorry, you're just making me remember a conversation that I had with Jason when we had a dinner together, which I will bring up with you next. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm sure it was great. Because my mom is Italian. She's from an Italian American family, and so we would always have powdered sugar over freaking everything. Didn't really matter what dessert it was, powdered sugar went over the top. And so anytime there's powdered sugar on a dessert, Jason hates it. He thinks it's like your response to cocoa powder. He thinks it's like this dry powder thing that doesn't need to be there, and it's just like, I don't know, it looks nice. You know,
I mean, whatever. Powdered sugar usually like melts it when it hits your mouth too, so that's not as bad as like a cocoa powder.
Yeah, it's not. And also, I don't find like a sprinkle of powdered sugar over anything really increases the sweetness to any significant degree, because it's just so like barely there in terms of its component. It's not like you just put like salt over the top of everything, or regular granulated sugar, which would be far too sweet and far denser. But anyway, the story about how I'm terrible at dessert or whatever, do you want to share with the class?
Oh, no, it's not about you. I think it was one of an instance where we, you know, there were three of us and we were choosing desserts to share. I think we got two and we kind of just shared or something. But Jason had very strong opinions about the method or the order in which a piece of cake is eaten. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to describe it for the class?
Well, especially if it's a slice of like ice cream pie or something, or something where there's a point on one end and like a crust end on another side, or a slice of cake where there's the outer icing and then the inner point of the circular cake that it was cut from. According to him, you start at that point and you work your way backwards from that to the end. I don't agree. I feel like you can start from any corner of it, and that if you're,
and especially in a sharing situation,
yes.
You know, if it's in the middle, pick the corner nearest to you and just do your best.
Exactly, Dan. I am 100% in agreement on this.
I'm fairly certain we had this conversation. I was like, oh wow, that's really interesting, and then I did the exact opposite of what he was discussing, and he probably hated me for it.
I don't know. He's not the kind to hold grudges, I'm fully on board with you, especially if it's a situation where you're sharing a dessert and it's in the middle of the table. Like reaching across to sort of like spear the front tip of that dessert or spinning the plate every single time you're going to take a piece of it is just like stupid. It's not like a germs thing, because it's like him and me or whatever, like the two of us together. It's like I don't care. But
well, and it's like, is it you know, Are you going for the good frosting and, you know, cutting people out of the loop or something, like, you know, take your turn and wait for the better part of it or something? Like I don't think it's that, but I guess it could be, because, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I would go outside in on a slice of cake because I wanted that like extra sugary frosting, because I was a child that liked sugar.
Mm-hmm. See,
but I don't think that's the motivation here.
No, and I don't like the frosting so much usually.
See, we would be great. You could take the point. I would take the backside.
Yeah, see,
I'll go for the frosting.
See, this is the problem, though, because Jason feels strongly about starting from the point, because he likes the frosting, but he just feels like philosophically you have to start from there. And that bothers me, because it's just like, I don't really want to have the sugary, like super icing part that's at the, like to take a piece of cake for an example, with the frosting on the top and the frosting on the back. Or the larger side of it. Like I would much rather have the from the middle of the cake to the bottom of the cake, excluding the outer frosting. So, you know, those, if it's like a layer cake or whatever, just like taking out the dry cake layers that have just whatever in between stuff it has and eating those. And then leaving the extra frosting pieces for him to have. You know, because I just usually find it's just too sugary. And so sometimes I can kind of like maneuver the cake that we're sharing into a situation where I can share it in that manner. and I can get
oh no, I knocked it over, and I'm going to start on this side.
Well, usually, if the cake is lying down, it's a lot easier to deal with it because then there isn't a thing. It's also a thing. I don't know if you encountered this. If you had a vertically oriented cake dessert thing,
it was vertically oriented.
Oh, see, yes. That's the tricky one with him, because if anything if anything falls off, then that's a travesty because the cake is now in complete disarray.
Interesting.
Like, you cannot compromise.
Yeah, we didn't have a cake of compromised integrity, mm-hmm. but. Now I'm curious what would have happened if we did.
Yeah, well, try that sometime. It's fun. Because, you know, then the toppings are all out of whack. And, there were the whipped cream on the top is off to the side now. And it's not on the top anymore. And it's like, you'll survive. I don't know. It's all going to the same place.
It makes me wonder if there are other things like this that I'm unaware of or just, like, that he thinks about that I have never even bothered to consider. Like, is there, if you get, like, a sandwich that's cut in half, do you start with one half or the other? I mean, I feel fairly strongly that you start from the cut section and work your way out just because the bread is usually softer there. But does it matter if I pick left or right or in or out? Does he have other opinions like this?
No, he doesn't have any opinions on the sandwich like that. And in fact, he would agree with you. Like, it would be weird to start from the uncut end of the sandwich because then all the stuff also slides out usually. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, he has other opinions. Have more dinners and lunches and things with him. He's fun.
Yeah. I feel like there's just things that I haven't considered. Like, you know, the one that I run into all the time here is, would you like your toast cut in half? And I would not, because it's a slice of bread and it's not really that big and I can handle it just fine. But the other person in my household has to have every piece of toast cut in half rectangularly, not triangles.
Interesting. And this is when you're at a restaurant ordering, they'll ask you
about
the toast?
This is here. When making buttered toast at home, I'm often asked if I want it cut in half. Same thing goes with sandwiches, I guess, too. I don't need any of that cut in half because I'll be just fine. Generally speaking, if it's the size of a slice of bread. The other person here, nope, wants it cut in half.
Yeah, see, this is a situation where I agree with you because I like the full sandwich experience. And I feel like when you cut a sandwich in half at home, you're kind of making a mess of the sandwich and you kind of like tore through some of the layers that you've constructed. And I just don't feel like it works as well. And I do, though, kind of agree with Amanda where I would prefer a sandwich that's cut like bisected into two smaller rectangle shaped pieces of bread or whatever from the top of the bread to the bottom of the loaf of bread orientation slice. Because it always bothers me with the triangle, because then you have one piece that's like mostly the top of the bread and one piece that's mostly the bottom of the bread. And it's like, I don't want that. I just evenly distribute it a little bit. So the triangles never really sat well with me, but I mean, I wouldn't send it back or like demand anything about it. It's, you know, especially if it's like toast, like who cares? It's fine. The thing I get a stickler about when it comes to toast is the butter process.
There's a process for the butter.
Well, it has to go on when the toast is piping hot.
Of course. It needs to be melted. Yes.
Yeah. It's one of those things that always kind of bugged me about when I would have toast at my mom's because she believes everybody should customize stuff to their own personal liking. And so when you would sit down at the table, you would have a stack of toast that was bread that had been toasted and then a butter dish. Well, it wasn't really butter. It was like, I can't believe it's not butter, but whatever. Like the butter approximation would be there.
You're saying she would go through the trouble of having that in a separate dish than the original container, but it wouldn't be real butter?
No, usually it would just be the tub of I can't believe it's not butter.
Okay, good. That makes sense.
Yeah, but the thing was you would get what was by then a cold piece of toast and you would have to butter it. So it was not... I mean, while I can't believe it's not butter is more spreadable than actual like cold butter, it doesn't like melt into the toast or anything by that point. And even if you were using real butter, it certainly wouldn't melt. You'd just be destroying the toast with like a little butter iceberg that was scraping across it. But it's one of those things where I feel very strongly. And if somebody is someone who doesn't want their toast buttered or wants extra butter or something, then they need to say that when the toast is happening. I feel like there's a toast station, a toast process. It needs to happen immediately when the toast is happening. There is not a situation where you're customizing a cold piece of toast later. You need to be upfront with that.
I agree. Amanda also does a fair amount of jams and jellies, and every now and then she'll get wild and she'll mix a jam and a butter on a toast, which is not the worst thing. It's just strange. This is just reminding me there. Have you seen Captain Marvel?
The movie Captain Marvel with Brie Larson? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a line in that movie from Sam Jackson where she says, like, tell me something that only you would know to see if he's a Skrull. And he says, if toast is cut diagonally, I can't eat it. And Amanda really liked that line. She said she related to it.
Yeah, that's funny. But going back to the jam thing, I'm not a jam person. Again, because it's sweet, usually. But also because I don't like having to have a separate knife and clean all this other extra stuff that I don't feel like I need to do. So even if Jason would like to have jam, I will just not bring it up as part of the toast making process. And then we'll sit down at the table and they'll be like, oh, we should have got the jam. And it's like, ah, shucks, too late. Because then we don't have
your
to
toast
go.
Is cold now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the jam doesn't melt. So the jam's cold. So it would have been fine to go on. But it's just one less thing to do that I don't feel like is super justified.
Yeah. You want jam on your toast? Have that on your own time.
Yeah, but the butter is essential. So I'm a strong believer in putting the butter on. Another thing is speaking of my mom's tendency to allow people to customize things to their liking, she would put out a vast array of salad dressings in the bottles, from the grocery store. Shelf stable dressings at one point that had been opened and were in the fridge for God knows how long now. and there's so many different ones, and they're all on the table for anybody to pick whatever they want. And then there's your undressed salad that you put on your plate or in a bowl, and you get to squirt as much, Newman's Own or Ken's Steakhouse sweet Vidalia or sugar-free raspberry vinaigrette or whatever horrible thing, skinny girl, all of the bad vinaigrettes. That you want to put on there. And then you would somehow mix that on your plate and you just wind up with this sort of like overdressed watery mess because there's just no way to like dress on your plate the appropriate amount of dressing and to get it to coat the leaves correctly without just having something that's overdressed.
Sometimes it astounds me how similar our upbringings were and how far we seem to have diverged in our later years.
So are you still a salad dressing... when you and Amanda sit down to eat, you bring out like 5 bottles of salad dressing.
No. I'm just saying that's what I grew up with as well. I'm very familiar with that dance, and dumping a blob of ranch that doesn't coat anything. It just kind of sits on top and you're kind of dunking leaves into ranch.
It's crudité. You don't have a salad. You have crudité.
Exactly. You just got lettuce crudité. Yeah. It's terrible. No. It's not how we roll anymore. But it's always nice to know that we have sort of a fundamental groundwork that we share.
Yeah. I mean, our mothers are relatively, I assume, the same similar age. So they probably have the same influences. I assume your house was also a I can't believe it's not butter or similar house, a smart balance maybe.
I think we were a Country Crock fan. I recall. I remember seeing a fair amount of Country. I'm sure the I Can't Believe It's Not Butter was in there as well. But from the early days, I remember the Country Crocks.
Yeah. See, we were not a Country Crock family, but I don't know why. It doesn't really seem to make a difference. They're all just weird vegetable spread things.
I feel like Country Crock predates I Can't Believe It's Not Butter. So maybe I'm not thinking of the appropriate area. No, no. When
I think they're very similar in their eras. It just was like a fad of like, oh, this has less fat than butter. It's better for you. What was really weird is, I don't know if you remember in the 90s, they had an I Can't Believe It's Not Butter spray.
I do. I remember the spray.
We had that.
What would you put that on?
Well, Speaking of toast, I would actually make garlic bread, sort of quasi garlic bread with it.
Spray on fake butter and garlic powder.
Yeah, garlic salt, yeah. Which is garlic powder and salt. And then
I've done that. We do that every now and then now still, just because like sometimes you're in the middle of something like, oh, this would be great with garlic bread, but we don't have garlic bread, so I'm gonna go do that.
Yeah.
What were we eating the other day? We were eating, I think we made some pasta or something, and halfway through it was like, I wish I had garlic bread. I'm going to go make a slice of fake garlic bread.
But yeah, but you're using, like, real butter, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure, like, yes? Or yeah, sure, like, sure.
Yeah, we can pretend. I don't remember. Probably not.
Okay. Well, I mean, what do you have for your butter or butter facsimiles in your house?
We have sticks of butter, and I believe I can't believe it's not butter as well.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Variety is the spice of life, they say.
It is. We have sticks of salted butter and sticks of unsalted butter, and we have Kerrygold in a little tub that we use for putting on toast and things.
Toast and things.
But back to the when I was a kid thing. And so I put it in the toaster oven with the sprayed on, I can't believe it's not butter, garlic salt.
Toaster oven. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
My mom had, I think it was, I want to say it was Black & Decker, but it was like, I don't know, must have been like early 80s. And that thing was a tank and lasted until probably like the late 90s. And that was the toaster that we had. But I would make.
You never had a slot toaster growing up.
No, we didn't have a slot toaster until after the Black & Decker kicked the bucket. And then we had a slot toaster. The other thing I would put on there is just the terrible Parmesan cheese that my mom would buy. I think it's DiGiorno or similar, like where it comes.
Like the big green shelf stable shaker thing?
No, not the shaker. You know how in the deli section in the 90s, they were like, ooh, it's fancy. We can give you pre-shredded or pre-grated Parmesan cheese.
Oh, just like in like a Ziploc baggie with like a gold twist tie holding it shut?
No, it was in like those little, I don't even know if it was like a pint container, but the little tubs, clear plastic tubs. And it was those, she would buy those. And it'd be like, you know, Italian blend with like Parmesan and some Pecorino. And it's like, yeah, sure. It has those things from Wisconsin that, you know, have no DOP designation. But it was the way you would just make a quick, kind of sad little garlic bread. And then you could also do the same thing with a quick little sad little pizza. Because since we were an Italian-American family, there would always be a pot of like sauce that had been made at some point in the fridge. And so you could take some of that tomato sauce and you could just spread it onto a slice of bread. And then you'd put some cheese on top of that, and then you'd toast that, and then you'd have like a sad little like toaster oven toast pizza thing.
Wow.
When pizza's not a toast, you can be sad anytime.
I gotta type that in. I can't say that I ever made toast pizza. Now, I have never owned a toaster oven, and I have always been jealous of toaster ovens. I continue to feel like if I buy a toaster oven, I'm going to buy the wrong one. But for toasting, for reheating, for all the useful things, I've just never owned one. And one day I would like to.
I think that they are really good. And there's a variety of price points for you to enter the toaster oven market with. Jason had a big old Breville that's actually up here, and I'm looking at it right now, which we don't have enough counter space to leave it downstairs.
It's been banished to your office.
Well, yeah, it feels stupid to throw it out or anything. It still works, although it was a little on the fritz right before we moved. But that thing was basically the oven that we used. Rather than turn on the crappy oven that was in his apartment that would take like 10 million years to actually come to temperature, we would just use the toaster oven because it is heating a smaller area and heats up faster and is also a convection oven. The Breville ones are really nice. So I think they actually are worth the money that they charge for those. And I believe that is also the Jean Syracuse approved toaster oven.
Syracuse.
But I had at my apartment a Black & Decker toaster oven that was like $60, and I got it at Macy's.
Oh, wow. And I don't think I've ever seen anything in the $60 price point.
Yeah, well, I think I want to say John, when he was doing his toaster oven reviews as part of the ad thing series that they had, he reviewed something that was similar to the one that I had, and he said it was it's fine, except, you know, it has these knobs where you turn it and sort of just like manually pick settings based on where a line is in accordance to other lines around the perimeter of a thing. So in terms of like picking like the perfect you know, setting for your toast to come at every single time, it doesn't do that. But just as a general oven, it was fine for $60. Because again, like if you're heating like two slices of pizza or something, then like why turn on your oven? And you don't want to do that in the microwave, because then you've just made something unpleasant. It's much, much better in a toaster oven. But the thing that I was going to say about toasting things. Oh, speaking of weird things that, you know, kids would do, and I talked about the sad garlic bread and sad pizza thing. Jason has this thing. He refers to it as a pizza. It is not, and I want to stress this, not a pizza. He takes tortillas, flour tortillas, from the grocery store.
Uh-huh. And Mission tortilla.
Yeah, just your usual Mission tortilla, although these days he uses the carb balance or the protein plus or whatever ones where they mix in like pea protein powder.
A little different color and they taste bad.
Well, those ones are better than the whole wheat tortillas. The whole wheat tortillas are just the absolute worst. But the
spinach tortilla,
it's not that good. It provides no discernible benefit other than being slightly green. But you take the tortilla, you put it flat, then you put a thin layer of tomato sauce. But he stresses that it has to be pizza sauce. From a jar of pizza sauce that you buy at the grocery store, it cannot, under any circumstances, be pasta sauce. It cannot be any like sauce you made at home yourself. It needs to be a jar from the store that says pizza sauce. And
I was just going to say, what in his opinion, differentiates pizza sauce and pasta sauce?
Well, it says pizza sauce on the side of it.
Also, sure, aside from the container.
Yeah, just the container, really. Because he also doctors it up every single time. So he will take that, then he will add olive oil, more oregano than is already in the pizza sauce, which is, I think, the main defining factor between that and the jarred pasta sauce. And then he will add more salt and sometimes pepper, and then chili flake. And then he will spread that in a thin layer on the tortilla. Then he will put on mozzarella cheese or Italian cheese blend from Trader Joe's is his preferred thing. They have a four cheese Italian cheese blend, which he'll use, because he finds that mozzarella doesn't have enough flavor. But then he will put the pepperoni on, and then he will put the another tortilla piece on top, and then he will put a thin layer of tomato sauce, just like he did at the first place, on the top of that. But then no additional cheese or anything goes on top. So you have
it's like a Taco Bell Mexican pizza. I don't even know what to call this.
Yeah, I know. This is what it is. And there's nothing on the top, so the cheese doesn't brown or anything like you'd want in a pizza. You have browned
quesadilla. Yeah, you have a pizza quesadilla.
Except that it has the sauce on the top. And so the sauce browns on the top, which is weird. And then he cooks it until the edges get crispy in the oven. And then he takes it out and then he cuts it into triangles, and then
it's a quesadilla, yeah. Calzone pizza?
Yeah, it's very weird. It's very weird. I mean, not to get him canceled or anything, but he calls it Mexican pizza, and I'm like, that's not what that is. It's just because it has a tortilla.
It's following the basic structure of the Taco Bell Mexican pizza.
Yeah, but it's not. It doesn't use anything like in terms of seasonings or anything. Like it's all just pizza.
Well, you've got the two tortillas there, mm-hmm. and then you've got the sort of sauce on top, which is, I guess, the sort of the general, if you squint at it, you might think maybe it's a Taco Bell Mexican pizza gone awry.
It did go awry. But he loves making those. It's a big thing. I mean, I would be okay trying it.
Don't get me wrong. It doesn't sound like pizza, but it sounds interesting, except for you said the oregano. There's a place, one of the few places that delivers to us nearby is a local chain, that their pizzas are fairly oregano-y on top of just their basic cheese pizza even. And an overly oregano-y pizza is almost inedible to me.
Oh, interesting.
There is a limit to how much oregano I can tolerate, and it is far lower than other people. I think it's like it's got a little bit of a cilantro vibe for me. Like it's just real strong.
That's weird. Because I have an aversion to cilantro, as we've discussed, but I can't get enough oregano in things. Although I will confess, I do think it is weird to when you get to a certain point with oregano, it's just like, are you just trying to make this into like pizza flavored Pringles? Like it is. It becomes an overwhelming flavor that kind of like takes out everything else. And so while I like the flavor of that oregano, I find that if it's not in balance with everything else, then I'm not enjoying it very much. I'm just noticing the oregano a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why the local restaurant, not local, called Oregano's, which is a Chicago style pizza place. They oregano up their pizza, but it's Chicago style pizza, so it's, you know, like an 8-pound slice of pizza, so it's fairly well balanced with the other flavors.
Okay, well, I guess that's something to consider. Yeah.
That's a polite way of saying gross.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never had actual Chicago pizza or Chicago style pizza, other than, you know,
you've never had Chicago style, like deep dish pizza.
I have had Pizza Hut, which claims to be deep dish pizza, but that is not deep dish pizza.
No. Oregano's is pretty good here. There's a chain here called Buddy's. We have a Lou Malnati's, but it's like 45 minutes away, and I'm not driving that far for a Lou Malnati's.
No. Well, it's something Jason has talked about a couple times, is apparently you can get them shipped to you frozen.
Yeah, that is a thing you can do, sure.
Yeah, I'm just...
There's got to be a Chicago-style deep dish pizza place you could go get takeout from.
Probably, I guess.
I mean, it's going to cost you $60 and it's going to weigh like 15 pounds just to get it back to your house.
And that's another thing that kind of makes me not really desire having one, is just because it's so big.
You're going to eat one slice and you're going to be done. So it's not like a pizza in the sense that like, I'm going to have a couple of slices maybe. You're going to eat one slice like it is this savory Italian cake, and then you're going to want to die, and then you realize you've got 8 more pounds of this to eat at some point.
Yeah. Well, there is also a sort of quasi, I guess, thing in terms of like convenience pizzas. Have you ever heard of Vicolo pizzas?
No.
Okay. I'm going to send you a website, and it's going to ask for your current location, and you're going to tell them get fucked. But the they're available at many grocery stores here, including Trader Joe's.
And cornmeal crust pizza.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Because you wind up with something that has a very firm crust, but also sort of like a soft and tender, like almost like pastry kind of consistency to the interior. Because it's also very thick. So the bottom edge and the sides get crispy, but then the middle kind of has like a little sort of like a soft pastry kind of vibe to it. But it is very odd. But we will sometimes buy those because you can just buy them in the packaging and then just keep them in the fridge for a little bit and be like, I don't want to do anything today. And then you just throw that in the oven.
Yeah, I learned from a friend of mine I used to work with who has a couple small children that the frozen pizza on standby in the freezer is a great, you find yourself exhausted and have no desire to pursue or make food kind of meal from here and there.
Yeah. I mean, I do like to make pizza. Although I have never made pizza dough from scratch. We'll usually get pizza dough from Trader Joe's or Whole Foods. Although we haven't done that in a really long time. The pandemic has kind of put
it. You get Trader Joe's dough. I saw that last time I was there and I was wondering if it was any good.
I would say that their regular dough is the best one they have. Their whole wheat one is fine. The, garlic herb dough is a little weird. I don't actually like that very much because I don't really want the herbs in the crust to be browned and cooked and stuff. Like, I just find that a little strange. So that's, I guess, personal preference. But the white flour one is fine. The quantity of it seems to have changed, though, because we used to be able to fill up a quarter sheet pan. I want to say it was quarter sheet. Yeah, I think it's quarter sheet. Sheet pan with it, and then, you know, put the toppings and stuff on top of that, and then bake that, and you would basically wind up with a sort of granny style pizza, or, you know, like the Sicilian quote unquote style pizza. We were not making Detroit style because we didn't have like the pan to like really get the crispy cheese edge and stuff. But you know, it was sort of in that sort of vein where you get like a fluffy, bready bottom crust to it, and then you have your toppings and stuff on top of that. But you put olive oil all over the exterior of it, so that kind of like makes it golden brown and crispy a little bit, like a deep dish pizza, sort of. I don't know if you're familiar with that kind of thing.
Sure, I think so. Mm-hmm.
So that was our preferred way of approaching pizza at home, just because it was the easiest way to do it.
Well, it looks like this Ficolo thing is available at a Sprouts not too far from where I live, so maybe I'll go to Sprouts for no reason other than picking one of these up.
Well, I mean, they have lots of stuff at Sprouts. You can get some Topo Chico.
Yeah, our Sprouts is kind of sad.
Okay.
Our Sprouts, I believe, used to be like a Michael's Craft store, just kind of like, now it's a grocery store.
Mm, well, the only other Sprouts that I've ever been in was the one in Culver City that they put where the Albertsons used to be on Culver and Venice, where those streets intersect in that god-awful intersection.
Sure, those are streets that I've heard of.
Yeah, well, if you were ever in the intersection, you'd be like, who made this? This is terrible. And the answer is, it was a railroad track or something all going along the side there. But the Sprouts itself is kind of sad on the inside. It sort of feels like you're in some sort of like natural food store kind of weird thing.
Oh, do they still have the big like the like wooden barrels full of like cashews and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. And I find that unsanitary and weird.
grab a handful and snack on them while you're walking around.
But that's the only place that carries the preferred nut milk of this household. Which is the hazelnut nut milk.
Hazelnut
milk? Yes.
Hazelnut milk. You're not talking about like hazelnut flavored.
No.
Almond milk or soy milk or something.
Yeah. You know how you can make almond milk, cashew milk. Stop naming nut milks. But what you might have with is you can have hazelnut milk as one of those options, but I haven't really seen it very many places other than just this one Sprouts, presumably because it's annoying to make that or something or not profitable.
Does it taste hazelnutty?
Not really. It doesn't. It just tastes like water that's sort of like vaguely opaque, which is sort of how I find most nut milks personally.
Well, I mean, some of them are kind of thick. Amanda is the milk buyer of the home, and she prefers it depends on the availability, but she prefers an almond milk. She prefers a vanilla sweetened almond milk because oftentimes it goes into coffee. But she likes even a vanilla sweetened almond milk in cereal, which is, depending on the cereal, is fine. But you can't just have I can't have a glass of vanilla sweetened almond milk. It's thick and sweet, and it's like, I feel like it's like bland eggnog is what I'm drinking.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. I disagree with Amanda vociferously on this, and I recorded an episode of Unhelpful Suggestions with Micah where he also where neither one of us is a fan of almond milk. We find that when you put it into coffee, particularly iced coffee, where you get the plastic container and you can see all the little precipitates come to the bottom of it, that is unpleasant to slurp up all the little bits from the almond milk sort of like curdling in contact with the acid of the coffee. So we don't like...
I'm not sure that we have that experience frequently.
Well, Micah and I have run into that, where you basically wind up with this grainy stuff in the bottom of the glass from the almond milk sort of like either the almond milk or the thickeners and stuff that are stabilizers that are added to the almond milk, sort of like precipitate to the bottom of the glass. When it,
well, maybe it's because she mixes. So like the coffee is in a cup cause I AeroPress it and then it gets topped off with the almond milk, but then that usually gets dumped into a to-go container. So you're kind of doing like a, you know, bartender style mix there. So maybe that helps. I'm not sure.
I don't know. Or maybe the sugar helps insulate it, I guess. Too.
It could be.
Maybe. But the, but yeah, almond milk is not, not, we don't like that. But the, it doesn't really matter. We don't use it that often. Usually just when we're making chia pudding, overnight oats, the things of that nature.
Have you had the oat milk? I hear the oat milk is good. I don't think I've tried the oat milk yet.
I like the oat milk. And I've had, it in various coffee beverages, and I find that it is better at simulating the sort of texture that you would want to simulate in a coffee environment than the nut milks are, because they're so thin and watery. But at the same time,
Saying oat milk is thicker?
Yeah, it's thicker. Because it's carbohydrates and a suspension of vegetable oil or canola oil, where it makes it thicker and richer, and you can do things like, you know, put it in like you can steam and foam it and stuff. Like that's why baristas prefer oat milk over other kinds of milk in a coffee environment, coffee making environment. Mm. But at the same time, it is a little heavy on the carbs and a little weird, in terms of like just having a bunch of vegetable oil you're drinking. But you know, milk itself is basically sugar and some liquid fat too. So, you know, pick your weird, mixture of things, I guess. But I'm just not a big milk drinker. Just don't have it that often. So hopefully I don't like fall over and break anything at some point. Although I have fallen and I didn't break anything, so that was good. Yeah, but the cheeses are mainly where I get my my calcium these days, I think. When it's some green vegetables. Do you use milk in your coffee? Or you drink
No. Okay. I drink a black.
Yeah, I drink my coffee black too. It solves all of these problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although was it today I was preparing the coffee. I did the preparation for her because she had to leave extra early and was kind of scrambling. And just some of that smell of the you know, coffee with like a weird kind of flavored creamer kind of smell to it. It took me right back to like, you know, the early days, like the first time I ever tried, you know, coffee that was in one of those like reheatable things in a corporate break room that was just like 10 hours old and just disgusting. And you put some of those little vanilla bean creamers in there. It smelled like that. And I was like, maybe I would like to have a flavored coffee one of these days. And then I just, you know, went about my day drinking my strong black coffee as I normally do.
Yeah. My mom and stepdad, they get the, what is it? International Delight or whatever, where it comes with, I think the one that my stepdad prefers is called like Italian cream or something yeah, weird like that. Uh-huh. And it's just like, I don't know even what that is describing really. That's not for me. Even just the artificial smell doesn't appeal to me, at all. It's
my
very
parents are the same way, but it's from the generation that drank Maxwell House and Folgers and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jason can only drink organic half and half.
Is that right?
Yeah. Whenever we used to go to visit my mom in Florida, we would always have to buy like a little pint of half and half that would be used for like 5 cups of coffee during that week. And then we just, you know, I guess go somewhere else to live.
Take it home with you.
Yeah. I'm sure the TSA loves that.
Drink it on your way back.
Yeah, you just put it in you can get a little case and put it in our checked luggage. I don't know. I never really liked milk at all in my coffee beverages. I do like some sort of milk substitute in a like a green tea latte or a chai latte, iced chai latte. Because I think you need the richness to sort of balance out the other stuff.
I can't believe we found this much to talk about. Yes. When it comes to desserts and beverages.
I mean, it's just a veritable cornucopia of options, really, when you think about it.
It's better than a cornucopia of spiders. I'll give you that.
Yes. But the problem is they put the chocolate on the cornucopia wrong, and if you were to actually get a cornucopia, then you could have the chocolate all the way around the rim. But you don't want to have a cornupizia, because then you'd have to put the sauce on top of it, and then that would be ruined.
Mm. And you gotta make sure you start with the correct leg of the spider when you're eating.
Yes, you do.
Otherwise, it's just incorrect.
Yeah. I prefer to save all the icing on the spider for somebody else. So you know, that's just me.
Mm. I feel like I would eat a spider if it was iced.
I wouldn't. Although I told you in the past that you probably forgot, I did eat a chicken stuffed water bug. A restaurant one time at a work event.
On like a dare?
Sort of. Basically, it was at the end of Watchmen, my supervisor took our team out for a sort of like celebratory lunch. It was at this one place in the Santa Monica Airport, which I don't think exists anymore, which is mainly known for sort of like weird exotic food, including bugs. And they had a chicken stuffed water bug on the menu, and it came with two. And all the people in the team were passing around this chicken stuffed water bug, just looking at it and gawking at it and just being like, oh, what's that? Like, what's going on there? And so then the only woman on the team and myself, the gay man, ate the chicken stuffed water bugs because everybody else was too chicken to do it. I can say that it's an experience that I have had in my life that I do not need to repeat in any way, and there is nothing good about it. I at least put the whole water bug in my mouth and chewed through that quickly. She unfortunately bit it in half and then had the other half to sort of look at and eat, I think would have been more mentally challenging for me. So, but she powered through that in a way that I did not.
Did you at least win like $20 or something?
No, but everybody thought we were cool. So that's the important part, really. Impress your friends.
Peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bitch.
You don't use that word.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you say so?
All right. So we should probably end it up there.
Yeah, why not?
Yes.
Of all the things we'll get canceled for, it'll be for me saying that.
Mm.
Also, I drank most of my scotch already.
Oh.